Indiana Jones and the Motherfucking Temple of Doom, released in 1984, the best Indiana Jones movie out there. I'll fight you on this. Don't fight me on this. It's great. And if anyone else out there has a problem with it, they can talk to John, the host of the Now in Technicolor podcast, because I think he's on the same page. We'll see.
That's right. Well, all right, everybody, let's grab our hats and grab our whips and let's swing into action. Everybody ready? Let's start the show.
Here, Tom Thompson, Adventure Begins. An exciting spectacle brought to you by Now and Technicolor Podcast.
Welcome to the heat. Swim another free. In a Technicolor, you know and me. Caught up in a flea. In a Technicolor, beat into the heat.
All right, everybody, and this is Jay Lost the Day, and I have a very special show with me today, another crossover featuring a guy that I really, really enjoy from a show that I've been listening to a lot. He hosts it with his wife, and it is Justin from So I Married a Movie Geek. Justin, how you doing,
what,
man?
What? What's up, John? What
butt.
Up in the butt? How you doing, man? Nice to be here.
I am doing great.
I'm very excited and honored to be on your show. Big fan of yours. So yeah, man, I'm super excited. And I'm talking about one of my favorite movies. So let's do this, man.
All right. All right. Just in case, listen to Justin's show if you don't, because it is fucking great. Love this show. It is awesome. The hilarity they get into is amazing. And hashtag Chrissy's fudge.
My wife does make some fudge. It's true. It's true. It's a roller coaster, man. It's, you know how relationships are, and we've had our show for going on 8 years off and on now, so we're all out there, warts and all, and yelling and, you know, arguing and curse words aplenty. So there you go.
Lots of hate
lots
sex.
Of hate sex, man. You know, therapy's expensive, guys, so just listen to our podcast.
That's right. Just listen to the podcast and bang it out and hate sex.
You know, whatever works, man. You know, keep the love alive. So.
Oh, yeah. Got to keep it alive, especially after so long, man. Got to keep that fire. Got to keep that flame going.
Have you seen Howard the Duck? You know, it's a great, great movie to watch with your wife. And, you know, just get all sensual and watch Howard the Duck together. So.
If there's a movie you're going to get sensual to, it's definitely Howard the Duck.
The writers of which wrote our movie we're talking about today. So, talking about Crazy
they
Sauce.
Did.
There you go.
All right, everybody. We're going to hop into it. We're going to talk about Temple of Doom.
If adventure has a name, it must be Indiana Jones.
Dr. Jones found the Archie for me. And he's going to deliver him now.
Say, who is this, Nur Hachi?
Put the gun away, Sonny.
Nothing shocks me. I'm a scientist.
And what sort of research would you do on me?
Nocturnal activities.
What position I like to sleep in?
Mating customs.
So you're an authority in that area?
Years of field work.
Oh, quit complaining. This is expensive stuff.
I told him to go forth and combat evil. And to help him, we gave him 5 sacred stones with magical properties.
Magic rock, fortune, and glory.
I'd sleep closer if I were you. For safety's sake.
Dr. Jones, I'd be safer sleeping with a snake.
I
means you will become a true believer.
I can't do it.
You can do it. Willie,
we are going to die.
From Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh man. Whew. Yes. Yes.
Oh, it's fucking great. It's fucking great. This movie is definitely very fun. It is interesting, and I do enjoy it. It was actually the very first Indiana Jones film that I had actually seen. I did not see Raiders first. I saw this one first. Man, I tell you what, it was dark as a little kid, but I guess it didn't really hit me as much as everybody kind of pointed out. And rewatching it recently, the only thing I really thought about watching the movie is like, yeah, it's kind of dark, but man, I think there was some directorial continuity issues going on here more than anything.
True. I mean, same for me, man. This was actually the first Indiana Jones movie I saw as a kid as well. I'm just going to lay my cards out there, John, because I don't know where you stand on this, but you asked what I wanted to talk about this. So I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan. When I talk about, you know, the holy trilogies, Back to the Future comes first for me, then Indiana Jones, then Star Wars. And Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and this is a controversial statement, is not only my favorite Indiana Jones movie, it's my favorite Steven Spielberg movie, John. So we're talking about up there, top tier level film that, you know, I saw as a kid, and it just like, it was, you know, like a double home run, basically, as a kid. And revisiting it just this week, I was just like, man, this movie is balls great, like super great. And I've had to like defend my love of it for like so long. And I'm just like, I'm tired of it, guys. Just come on my side of the fence and love Temple of Doom for what it is, which is it's just like a super racist, sexist roller coaster ride, man. It's awesome. Come on.
It is. It is an epitome of like the 80s shooting the 1930s, because the 1930s is full of racism and sexism. So it was pretty much set up very, very well in that respect. And yeah, the movie is fucking balls deep fun. Like, there is just, I mean, for what it is, one of those movies that if I see it on, I will stop what I'm doing and watch it, because it is freaking great. I love this movie. Now, the only thing, I think it actually gets a lot of unwarranted hate, and, you know, like you say, you defend it quite a bit, and I feel like it gets a lot of unwarranted hate on the story just basically because of, Willie and Short Round. But the thing is that it gets me is I'm like, Short Round's not even that bad a character. He's less annoying than Willie is. Willie literally does one thing. One thing. Aside from that, she's there for cleavage. She was there to pull the lever and get lots of cleavage shots. Aside from that, Short Round actually helps fucking Indiana Jones like a number of times through this entire film. And I'm like, yeah, the part where he's a kid and like they're sitting there in the spot where they're overwatching the ritual, and Indiana's like whispering, and then all of a sudden Short Round opens his mouth and it's damn near as loud as he can yell. And it's like, okay, I can see that being really annoying. But aside from that, he really does try to help a lot.
Yeah. I mean, those are the two things that come up. They're like, okay, you like Temple of Doom, so you like Kate Capshaw in that movie. And I'm like, well, number one, she's playing like a starlet actress, you know, who thinks she's the shit, even though she's in this random ass show in Shanghai now. So she's playing the part like she's an annoying, you know, actress who's overly dramatic and loud and shrill. So she did the job well for what she was given.
Oh, she does the job. So she does it well for the part that she was written in.
And so there's that. So I don't mind it. I think she's funny, and I think that the relationship between her and Harrison Ford and how they kind of bounce off each other is great. So I like that. So, and then Short Round, and another one of my favorite movies famously is The Goonies. I loved him in The Goonies, and a lot of people hate that movie because they're like, oh, those kids are so annoying and loud. And I'm like, yeah, weren't you loud and annoying when you were, you know, 12 years old? Like, yeah. So.
Right. I mean, you have to give it that. Yeah. I mean, most kids at 12 years old are all loud and annoying. So it's perfectly set up. And at the same time, it's a great movie. And it's one of those things that I think you had to see it when you were younger to really capture the entire like feels of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, like this is actually his first actual acting gig.
Yeah.
Which I think is funny because he didn't even come in to audition for the part. I think his brother came in to audition for the part and he was telling him what to do and what not to do. And they just liked that so much, they just made him Short Round.
Yeah, he came in with his brother Tall Round. Or is it medium round?
Medium round.
So, but no, I mean, his character, I mean... This movie's a prequel. This is, you know, this comes before it is, Raiders. It is.
That's why you don't hear anything about the Ark of the Covenant. Now.
I mean, you could almost consider this as Indiana Jones Begins, because at the beginning of this movie, Indiana Jones is kind of a dick. He's kind of an asshole. He's looking for fortune and glory. So Indiana Jones has a very clear character arc throughout this movie, and Short Round, whatever you think of him, kind of helps. Indiana Jones as a character get through that character arc, and there's a couple moments where it gets closer to the end of the movie and you're like, oh, that's more the Indiana Jones I know from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And that makes sense because, like I said, this is a prequel, and everything he goes through here kind of makes him the man you see at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So,
oh yeah, definitely. And the fact that it's a prequel and with the dark tone of the actual movie, and then if you watch it and you watch it in actually a sense of going, well, here, if this is a prequel and you watch Temple of Doom, then Raiders, and then you actually watch Last Crusade, you can watch these movies lighten up as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could actually see the storyline lighten up. So even that even gives a lot more precedence to what you said with the whole thing of it kind of giving you the idea of what Indiana Jones was more by the time you get to Raiders of the Lost Ark through this storyline, to watch him be just this total dick, and then he just kind of lightens up and he becomes more the man you said as I'm agreeing with you that he's more the man in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then if you were to follow the storyline into the next film, it kind of lightens up even more with Sean Connery and all that fun
and
stuff.
Nazis. There's nothing lighter than Nazis, John.
Oh, well, definitely Nazis. I mean, well, here's the fun thing. This is the only one of the Indiana Jones films that doesn't mention the Ark of the Covenant or Nazis.
Exactly. So there's no Nazis in this one.
So this has to immediately be Chrissy's least favorite because there's no Nazis.
You know what? I can't even remember. Do we watch? I think we watched most of these for our podcast, but I remember she loved this one. I was about to say, another reason why I like this one a lot is this is the only Indiana Jones movie where it wasn't like a job or like a gig for him, you know?
Yeah.
He just kind of like happenstanced around this whole thing. And it became, you know, the whole theme and thrust of the movie.
Well, it became a whole thing where it was literally this one just fell into his lap.
Exactly.
And it just became a whole fortune and glory thing where literally you have Indiana Jones less the archaeologist and more the treasure hunter.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, I guess I could feel some people in the sense of they're like, well, if that would be part of their complaint for their dislike of the movie, would just be the fact that they're like, well, he's a treasure hunter and less of an archaeologist like he is in the other two movies. And I'm like, well, if it's a prequel film, yeah, I could see it. I could definitely see it.
Or if, you know, if you're younger and you could compare it to this kind of being more Man of Steel, you know, he was kind of douchey. You know, just like fighting people and knocking buildings down and stuff. And then by the end, he was more respectable. And then he became brooding and, you know, depressed and stuff in the second one. No, wait, that's a terrible analogy. What am I doing? John, what is your favorite Indiana Jones movie?
My favorite of them, actually is The Last Crusade. I love the one with Sean Connery. This one I love all three of them a whole lot, but just like I love the one with Sean Connery. Okay. Just because I think the fact that I think it's hilarious. Him and the dynamic between him and Sean are just hilarious. And then I think this one is my second favorite.
Okay.
But they're very close.
I respect that. I respect that. And you know, when people are, you know, we talk about Crusade and stuff. We talk about the two of them together and that stuff. So the major reason that I love Temple Doom above all the others, including Thou, which will not be named, is this movie has so many amazing set pieces in it. Like, it's all set pieces, basically. Like, it'd been a while since I'd seen it, and I was watching it this week, and I was just like, one after the other, it's just set piece, set piece, set piece. And then as you look at each set piece together, they're just crafted so masterfully in terms of tension and movement. And, like, that's why this movie, which is almost 2 hours long, after I watched it, I'm like, oh, that feels more like 90 minutes, because, like I said at the beginning, it's just like a roller coaster from start to finish. And the start is like a huge musical number as well. So I just like, I get really angry when people rank this as like their least favorite or the worst of the series being the four. And I'm just like, what are you thinking? Like, you must be watching the wrong movie, because I could just like start listing all the set pieces, which I watched this movie at a super young age. So I think you talked about how like, the themes and like the child slavery thing and the racism thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I was a little kid. I didn't know anything about that. I was just like, oh, that sucks. Like, hopefully he's going to help them or something. I was just like, so.
Well, yeah, as a kid, that's exactly what you're thinking. You're just like, holy shit, man, this sucks balls, man. That would suck,
yeah,
man.
Like, yeah,
I hope he saves those kids, brother.
Those kids are poor. They're in that mine. Somebody help them. Holy crap. So, yeah, like that stuff wasn't like, I just kind of flew over my head. So
I don't know. I'd already been kind of working off, like at 10 years old, I started doing like lawns and throwing hay and a lot of shit. So I'd already been doing a little bit of work, and I was like, man, this is suck balls, man.
Well, this was,
I was like, at least I'm getting paid. This would just be terrible. You busting rocks with wooden fucking tools for one thing.
Eating eyeball soup when they're probably not even getting the eyeball soup. That's for the rich folk.
That's for the rich folk, man. And them eyeballs, man, they was tied down to sticks. And they had to shoot that damn scene like 50 fucking times just to get them sticks, just to get like 5 fucking eyeballs.
Oh, man. No, so this movie has the best set pieces, like, if you count as a movie, of any Indiana Jones movie. Like, you know, Crusade has the two of them, Sean Connery and Harrison Ford, and they're great together.
Yeah.
Has a few great set pieces. You know, Raiders.
I think this has the most extravagant set pieces of all of them.
Or maybe just for a kid, you know, in elementary school or whenever, when I first saw this. Like I said, we've got the musical sequence to start off. You got my favorite sequence of all the Indiana Jones movie, which is the bridge scene. You have the minecart sequence. You have... Yep. The ritualistic sacrifice of that poor man who looked like he got laid in Hawaii and then suddenly stepped into the Temple of Doom all of a sudden by accident. So
he's like, this motherfucker got off the plane, got laid.
He's like, where's my wife?
Instantly brought. Where's my wife at?
the eating all that nasty shit, and make monkey brains and all that stuff.
Yeah. What about that snake? What about the snake stuffed with what is that, eel or leeches? I'm not sure if it's the small eel or leeches.
Either way, I was like,
I think it's
I'm
eel.
Not down with that at all.
No.
Even as a kid, I appreciated the whole sequence of are they gonna bang or not, because it's just. It's constructed in a way, it's kind of like a, you know, one of those 1930s screwball comedy capers where like, oh, I like him more than he likes me or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then all of a sudden one of the thuggies comes out of the background and kind of throws a wrench in everything. I love that shit. So just throughout this movie, it's just filled with stuff like that. And I don't know, man. I love it. I think it's great. I love it. Ugh. Anyway.
Oh no, yeah, no, it's fantastic, and that, yeah, like you say, that whole thing with them, are they gonna do it? Are they not gonna do it? Are they gonna do it? Like that is actually one of my favorite scenes. Because I think it's like one of her actually best acted scenes in the entire movie. I think, like, literally I was watching that, I was like, man, this is hilarious. Because they're going back forth, it's really witty, everything's really fun, and then even when you get to the part where she like is like, hey, and she kicks him out of the room, I'm like, this is great. But she like it in the whole thing where she tries to like push the other side of the fireplace, and she's so freaked out. The look on her face when she goes to put her hands on the boobs of the statue is hilarious. I like freaking died laughing.
And I think that's the scene where he got hurt in this movie. And that was another big thing about this movie. He hurt his back when he was shooting that scene where like one of the thuggies or something, he's fighting with him and he flips over. And so through several, a huge portion of this movie, they had to use a stuntman for a lot of his scenes. And then I think he's had like back problems off and on since. I don't know if this is where it all started, but yeah, that was another big thing in this movie. Like there was a lot of insert shots of stunt Harrison Ford instead of the regular one. So
he hurt his back pretty early on, pretty much in the movie. Like you said, dude, he flipped somebody and then had to have back surgery. And I'm like, wow.
It's crazy.
Man, that sucks. That reminds me of Stallone in fucking The Expanse. Hey, tackle me. Tackle me. Oh, God. It broke his back. I'm like, that was a bad idea, Stallone. You shouldn't have had a guy that was a professional wrestler and a football player tackle the fuck out of you.
Oh, man. What do you think about the fact that that Spielberg kind of shits on his own movie?
Oh, he does. He's like, man, I don't like this movie that much. It's really super dark. I kind of was trying to do it in line with the way that, Lucas did Star Wars with the whole idea of the second one being darker. But he's like, I don't really much like it, except for the fact that I met my wife. He's like, that's about the only good thing from what I understand. It's just like, he's like, I was led by God to do this movie so that way I could meet my wife.
See, well, at least he liked her performance enough to marry her after this.
Well, he did. He really enjoyed her performance, which is why I think there was a lot of cleavage shots.
You keep going back to the boobs, man. The boobs.
I can't help it. There's a lot of cleavage shots. Like the last like third of the movie is literally just her boobs.
I'm all caught up in the set pieces and the propulsive action and all that stuff. And John's just like, okay, where's the boobs now? How much of the area of the boobs can I see in this point in time? So,
well, no, I mean, like, you gotta understand, like, there's him and he's fighting the big dude at that point too. But I'm just like, every time you see her, it's damn near a direct shot of her boobs, and I'm like, what the hell did she have? Did y'all really have nothing more for her character? Other than just to be a damsel in distress and like yell a lot and like really offer nothing to the situation and give a lot of cleavage shots.
Oh man, I remember being a kid and not being able to see R-rated movies. This is like before PG-13 came along, and this is one of the movies that kind of started all that. But I remember before PG-13 came along. And I was in the video store, like, looking at all the options, and I couldn't watch R-rated movies. So my goal often would be like, okay, what is, like, the hardest as fuck PG movie that I can find? You know, like, I'm like, I'm ready. Let me see some shit. And, like, Indiana Jones for a PG movie, man, was pretty hardcore. So I think that's probably why it just, like, sticks out in my mind a lot, is because I remember like finding it and be like, dude, this is like super adult. Like I've totally like hit the gold mine here with this one. So
yeah, I watched a lot of Bruce Lee movies too, and The Chinese Connection.
Not as much boobs in those though, man.
As a matter of fact, you'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah, if you think, like, as a matter of fact, there's more boobs in a couple of those movies than there is in this movie.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, it's kind of ridiculous. I was like I said, the Chinese Connection, there's one shot where literally, like, she just pulls her fucking boob out.
Oh, that's kind of like Just One of the Guys. You remember that movie?
I'm not sure.
Just One of the Guys is a mid-80s movie, and it's like one of those high school comedies where
is that the one where she dresses up like the dude? And she has that really funny ass
brother
that has like a fucking mullet type deal and always in flannel.
I
have seen this movie. This is a hilarious movie.
So a lot of the movies that I saw too young as a kid were on HBO, and that was one of the ones that was on HBO like all the time.
Oh, yeah.
When it was just HBO solo, just one HBO, and you know,
I'm going to be honest with you. There's a movie I saw at like 10 years old that I should have never seen. And I was just because my ass was up at like 11 o'clock and I had a TV. And I turned the TV on, and I shouldn't have, because there was a movie come on that I've never seen again, and I probably never should have seen right then and there.
Oh, God, you've built it up. What is it?
I don't know what the name of the movie. I think it's called Sex Island.
You think it's called Sex Island?
I think that's what it was called. I've always seen, I saw it when I was like 10 years old, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Well, number one, that sounds amazing, and I just punched it in, and I don't see a Sex Island, John.
They literally were on a cruise to this island, and there was this woman that was kind of a dominatrix, and she like literally like was using people as chairs.
What is this?
And like she banged this dude in a pool, and I'm like, that's basically what I remember, and that was 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago.
Was this on Skinemax late at night through like the...
No, this was HBO.
Oh, man. Yeah, there were a lot of those for me, but those are mainly on Cinemax late at night, like the Emmanuel movies or something like that, where like... or Shannon Tweed, one of Shannon Tweed's like 20,000 movies that are basically the same. And
right.
Oh, man.
Old skin.
That's what happens when you just start talking about boobs and just seeing them all the time.
It does. It just you fall into that pit of boob.
The tipple of boobs.
Speaking of which, has nothing to do with boobs. Did you actually know the original title of the movie was going to be Temple of Death?
Temple of Doom sounds better. No?
It is. Well, they thought it was too foreboding, so they decided to go with Doom. And the only place that actually chose to go with the original title is Germany.
There you go. Go.
Germany actually is the Temple of Death.
Well, I love that, like, okay, this movie is filled with, like, racism and, like, child slavery and stuff, but we can't let the title have death in it, man. That will totally turn everyone off, man. No.
Right. That'd be just horrendous. I want to point out that like they tried to go for some continuity in a lot of points to keep continuity going, but then failed horrendously.
These continuity things that throw you off.
All right, one I want to specifically point out. All right, look, he gets whipped by the dude. Okay, he has the slash across his back. He gets whipped more than that and should have more than one slash. But okay, he keeps the original one we saw go into his back when he is standing there during the Kali Ma ceremony.
Right?
He has the actual whip slash across the top of his back. During this point, though, they bring her in and he puts her in there and she goes down into the pit. Okay, why is it when dude went down the pit with the lay, by the time he was about a halfway to three quarters of the way down, this man is already in flames. Mm-hmm. She is damn near like 10 feet off the top of this motherfucker and she passes out. That's it. She passes out. She doesn't burn. For some reason, that dress is like a heat-resistant dress.
You know who you sound like now? You sound like fucking nitpicking Nick or who was somebody? Somebody was nitpicking something. Nick and Dave were saying something today, and I'm just like, it's a movie. It's like you're basically saying like, the Temple of Doom fire
I'm
pit doesn't work
to be
like
a dick
that.
About it. Like, I'm not trying to be a dick, but like literally, you see 10 minutes before this motherfucker is on fire, like halfway down.
Because
and then
he had
this
a lay.
Bitch is like
he
wearing
had
a fire resistant.
He had a lay under his neck. And that was, I mean, you just don't.
The lay is what just set it off, man. If she'd had a lay, it'd have negated all the fire resistance of that sudden Indian dress that she had on.
Well, maybe it was turned up to 11 for him, and they like dialed it down for 6, you know, just for kicks. I don't know.
They did, and they didn't. And Kali Ma didn't even pull her heart, and the dude didn't even pull her heart out.
John's like, at least go for the boobs, man. Come on. Kali Ma.
He didn't pull her heart out. He was like, nah, fuck it. I don't even care, man. We just gonna watch this bitch burn.
Molaram, fantastic fucking villain, man. Talk about someone who is instantly recognizable and like just like sticks out, and you're just like, this guy, he knows how to fuck man.
Yeah.
He knows how to like really, really ruin your life. The
man, that's a guy that knows how to lay pipe. The pipe of your destruction.
He's
now, for real,
he's stealing
though,
women's hearts everywhere, just grabbing it right on their chest.
Them. That's right. He's like, love making skills, don't need them. I got a whole bag full of hearts, all women's.
It's too bad. It's too bad we like Temple of Doom came out in 84 instead of like around now, because I need some like Molaram prequel or some kind of Molaram universe.
Oh, dude, you know good and well had that come out nowadays, there'd have been like some sort of protest out the theater in streets somewhere. There'd have been fucking protest about the child labor laws at the very least.
Molaram for president, United States. Let's do this, man.
We do it, except for the fact that he's completely Indian and Indian.
Oh, who cares? And, you know, who cares? And,
I think it's hilarious though, because after he did this movie, it went over so well with him in the shaved head that he just continued to shave his head and has done a ton of Indian movies where he's the villain.
Oh, hell yeah. He's got to be out. He had to be out in India, like India, just walking the streets. And everybody's like, hey, Molaram, steal my heart. You know,
I have to assume this guy is like a fucking god there. Like, they just love this man. They're like, he could murder someone and they'd be like, it's all good.
So good. So good. So good, man. Yeah. Him, and as a kid, I was like really super freaked out by the, is he a king? Prince? The king. No.
He is a prince. He's a king, actually. He is the
12-year-old boy that sounds like an 8-year-old girl.
Wait, is he? He's the Maja Ra.
Yes, the Maja Ra.
Which India wanted pulled out. India wanted Maja Ra pulled out because they felt that and a lot of things in it were detrimental to their culture and society and would not allow filming in India. So they shot the whole fucking thing in Shangri-La, about 80% of it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see him come in he's like, so in my country, he like got the like Michael Jackson voice. He's like, I love it. Or like, oh no, what is this kid doing?
Yeah.
And so that leads to like my second favorite scene of the movie is when Indiana Jones is like on one level in the Temple of Doom beating one guy's ass, and then Short Round's on the other level beating the Maja Ra kid's ass at the same time.
Right.
I'm just like, yes.
Love
symmetry.
It. I love that. Okay, here's the continuity thing.
Damn it, John, enough with your continuity errors.
What about how his head is like literally almost under the roller, but yet it's there for like a few minutes, and then he raises up after the knife comes out, and all of a sudden they're like 5 feet back from the motherfucking thing.
Oh my God. I'm going to start calling you Cinema Sins.
Cinema Sins.
It must be awful to watch a movie with you like, I just timed that. He should be dead by now, lame.
Actually, watching a movie with me is awesome because I don't talk.
You're making notes.
I watch the movie.
You're making continuity notes in your head.
Well, that just became because I've done a podcast for so fucking long. I mean, I realize this one is relatively newish, but I've been doing podcasts for 3 years, and I did reviews, and after so long, you watch a movie, and you just sit there and point shit out like that all the time. Like, Logan, when I finally watched Logan, everybody had like watched it and loved it and loved it and loved it and loved it. And I was like, man, I fucking watched it. And I was like, oh, I love this movie. But I kept pointed out a couple continuity errors while I was watching the movie. And I was like, my son of a bitch.
Damn it. Debbie Downer.
Because there's, I do it to myself. Because when I was a kid, I would watch movies and I'd talk, and then I'd watch it with other people, and I'd fuck up, and I'd be like, "Hey, man, a great part's about to come up right here."
Boobs, sex boobs.
I was like, "Man, you just wait. There's a hilarious joke about to head up right here." And so I had to train myself to stop doing that as I got older,
man.
And now I just sit there in silence, which is great, because I'm like, "Shh, watch the movie."
Oh man,
shh, watch it.
Just imagine.
We'll talk about it after. Shut up.
Just imagine what state George Lucas must have been in. Like, they're like, oh, him and Spielberg, like, that was a really dark time in our lives. Like, George Lucas was going
through a divorce.
I was breaking up with my girlfriend, Spielberg said. So it just reflects where we were. And I'm like, so there's like child slavery.
So at that exact moment, you were like, we hate kids and we hate women. We hate them both. Fuck them in their fucking stupid asses.
But I can kind of glaze over those things because, like I said,
there's a lot
of awesome shit going on in the movie. So I don't know. It's weird. It's weird.
Oh, it's weird. It is totally weird. No, I don't mean to do it, but yeah, there's hilarious. But I love the continuity, like you said, though, when they get to beating the two guys' asses and they're in synchronization as to actually hitting them in the same fucking way.
A great John Williams score in this movie as well, of course.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
the score is amazing.
If you're gonna score a roller coaster ride of a movie, he would be my first choice, and fucking knocks it out of the park with this one as well. So,
does the man do a bad score?
He doesn't, man. He doesn't.
I didn't think so. I was like, that guy has an ear for music and has an eye for matching it up with film.
Oh man, so good, so good. And I like when I was watching this week, I was trying to watch it with a more critical eye, and I just couldn't find too much. Like I said, other than the issues with overt racism and child slavery and stuff, but whatever, man.
Yeah,
it's very, very 80s. It works. I like Short Round. I like Kate Capshaw, even though she's annoying. Oh,
I mean, she's all right.
I forgot one of the most famous scenes: the friggin' spikes and bugs room. You know, all the bugs and spiders.
Yeah, I did
and the
touch
spikes.
On this earlier when I said the lever, but we didn't really talk about it. Yeah, the spikes. We're here. All right. That's another point, but I'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, that scene's fucking great, man, where they're like Short Round walks in and actually trips the mechanism for shutting the doors and then inadvertently sets the whole mechanism into working by doing exactly what Indiana said. Just stand up against the wall.
You set booby trap, Indiana Jones. You set booby trap.
That's right.
Technically, it was a good probably year of his life where he was pretending to escape certain doom underground. the guy who played Short Round of Dating, because there's a lot of just like he's almost dead in both those movies, and they usually involve some kind of spikes or some kind of booby trap or something. So,
man, they did not like the Asian kid.
You know what? I see Short Round as kind of like
Pete would be offended.
The grandfather to Data. Like, there could be the same universe, you know? Short Round survived all this, had kids.
Short Round survived all
had
this.
Had kids. They
and turned into Mr. Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi. Yeah. All Asians are related.
Thus having a grandchild, which later became
Data.
Data in the Goonies.
It all makes sense, man. It totally all makes sense.
We're tying it together, man. Tying it together.
I'm pretty sure I had some kind of like Temple of Doom action playset as a kid too. Like, I was so into this movie, so I did my own ritualistic sacrifices as a 5 or 6 year old with my Indiana Jones playset. So it's all cool.
Wait, you had a playset?
Hell yeah! I think
that's awesome.
I'm pretty sure there was a playset of some kind, like. Like I said, I literally, no jokes, probably watched this at 6 years old for the first time. So it's definitely like, I mean, my daughter's almost five. I definitely wouldn't show it to her yet, which is weird because I she just watched The Goonies and Back to the Future in the past couple weeks for the first time. Love those. And she's seen the covers of these because I have the three Indiana Jones movies. And she's like, I want to watch this. And I'm just like, nope. You know, there's Nazis and face melting off.
Don't make me feel like a bad parent then, man. Don't make me feel like a bad parent then.
No, dude.
My kids are 5 and 4 and have seen the entire trilogy.
They have? What do they think of, what do they think of this one?
They liked all of them.
Really?
They didn't have a problem with any of them, yeah.
Oh, man. My kid.
We sat as a family and watched all three of them.
I don't know if my kid could take this one. There's a lot of crazy shit that goes on in this one. Talking about nightmare fuel for some of this, so.
I mean, admittedly, they're little kids, and, you know, they were playing at least a little bit through the movie, so I don't know if they took the entire thing.
See, my kid would be like asking questions and like jotting down continuity errors, like John, like she really gets into it. So Chrissy like a month ago let her play a zombie video game at the arcade. And she's been having nightmares since. So
Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
What is it?
No, I know it's not that game. I know it's
she's
not.
Scared.
That's the
she's,
old Sega game.
We let her play Plants vs. Zombies, and she's even scared of that. So she's like,
really?
She's like, I love plants and flowers, but if I like them, will the zombies come in my house? And we're like, no, that's just a all game.
Right.
So
all right. Now here's the fun part. Both of my oldest kids have seen the Indiana Jones movies, but we sit down to watch The Great Mouse Detective, and my daughter is instantly like, this is too dark and scary.
It's so crazy. It's all
enjoy the con.
It's always a crapshoot.
Enjoy the contrast there. It's weird.
It's always a crapshoot. I mean, we watched the newest Beauty and the Beast in the theater, just me and her. And at one point in that movie, he like turns almost to a werewolf, and she's like, "He was angry. I was scared of him." So I was just like, "Oh man, I don't even know where what the barometer is for her anymore."
I understand. Like I actually did the same thing. I took my little girl to see that movie in the theaters. I promised her I would, and she loved it.
Yeah.
She loved it. As a matter of fact, we were sitting there watching it, and at the end of it, I go, man, it's not too bad. This is a pretty good movie. And she goes, and I was like, well, what do you think you'd give it, sweetie? And she's like, well, I give it a 4. Out of 5, you know, 4 out of 5. I was like, so you give it a 4 out of 5 or an 8 out of 10. That's pretty good.
Nice.
I was like, I'd probably give it a 7, 7.5.
Nice.
It was actually pretty good. I liked it.
Oh, man. That's awesome, man.
I feel like Gaston, although I really enjoyed the guy that plays Gaston, I feel like they should have had someone slightly larger. He was a little too small to be Gaston, but overall, I really enjoyed his performance.
True.
Regardless of that, what about that bridge scene, man? What about that damn bridge? It's shot in 3 different locations.
So the bridge scene is my favorite scene or set piece of any of the Indiana Jones movies. And I just think it's perfect, man. Like, I remember just watching that scene just like over and over. Like, I get to the end of it, I'd rewind it back, watch it again, rewind it back because...
Oh, I understand.
Oh, man. Like, I grew up...
It's a fantastic scene. So fucking fantastic.
Because as a kid, you're just like, was that the only option left? Was that the only thing that he could do? And so I would like go over my head. I was like, what else could he have done? Like, if he would have submitted and like going in, he was dead. So that was pretty much all he had to do. And oh man, it's just it's so great. Such a great scene.
It's amazing. I love how like the actual thing was the original bridge is shot in Shangri-La, and like it's actually built by British construction workers that happened to be there luckily at the time. And they shot the whole thing there, except for where the bridge is actually laying up against the side of the mountain, which is shot somewhere else, and the alligators are shot in Florida. But the way it's all pieced together is so amazing. And I really love that scene where he's fighting with Maharam on the fucking bridge. And then literally like, okay, so the stones are in that bag the whole time.
Yes.
Until Indiana Jones starts actually speaking.
You betray Sheba. Yeah, he goes.
Yeah, but you betray Sheba, and then he goes into an actual chant after that.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they light up, and he just happens to actually get the right stone to give back to them, which I find is interesting because I'm like, well, man, here it is. They finally start burning out of the bag, and I realize it's a plot device as to how he actually gets Rahavan actually off of the bridge by getting to catch this thing and it burning his hand.
Yeah.
It burned his hand. He tossed it up and it's instantly not burning and cool when Indiana gets it.
And that's like, not okay. That's not how those stones work. What?
I was like, okay, that's interesting. It's like, okay, how does this work? How did they go from just glowing to being like on fire to being, you know, the other two are gone. So now it's dead cool. It's no longer like the heat of the devil.
But, you know, he was a really, really bad man. And when he fell, his head hit the rocks a couple times before he landed into the alligator pit. So.
He did. He bounced a couple times. And then instead of hitting the bank, He slightly somehow veers off to into the actual water. And I love the fact that literally it's just like a fucking some cloth filled with a bunch of meat.
Oh, man.
Thrown into the water.
Oh.
Because admittedly, they do it well because at one point the alligator does grab the actual body of this and you see him yank a giant chunk of meat. So I'm like, well, at least they did do that well. So it looks like they're tearing his body up.
Oh, man. So like I said, so that's my favorite set piece. And then if you go back from like, I think it's like 10 or 15 minutes, right before the minecart sequence, which is also amazing. And
oh, yeah.
And literally like a roller coaster in itself.
Well, I mean, seriously, come on now. The entire minecart scene, like literally all of the audio for that is shot using Disney roller coasters with none of the sound effects turned on.
Oh, yes. Yes. No, I was about to say there's this one point where he's about to steal the stones and kind of jet like, oh, you know, fame and glory. I got the stones. I'm going to leave. And then he hears some poor kids getting whipped. Down in like,
yeah, this is
down in like the,
this is where he discovers,
and he's like, oh, and so that's where he decides, okay, I'm gonna actually just try to save these kids.
This is where it really turns from the whole fortune and glory into the more of the Indiana Jones that we
he grows
know,
up. Indiana Jones
going
grows
into,
up,
Raiders of the Lost Ark, like right in that exact moment. That's where you start to see Indy kind of grow up from this young playboy man that flies all over the world to more of a hero of sorts. Yeah.
So Indiana Jones that's where he begins, basically. And then there's this shot, famous shot where there's a mine cart moving where the kids are like with their pickaxes and one of the bad guys looks up and it's like his silhouette, like in the dust. You know that shot I'm talking about where Indiana Jones is like,
oh, yeah,
he's like,
right there.
He's like, what the fuck is going on? I'm going to beat some ass. I'm like, yes. That's one of my favorite shots in all of
After he's like standing there whipping the kids,
yes,
with the mine cart,
yes,
and he turns and it's got that silhouette and he's standing,
yes,
there and he's like fucking pissed and he starts to grab that,
yes,
rock.
Yes. That shot is like iconic. When I think of Indiana Jones, I think of that shot. That was the shot in my head, John, when I went in to see Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull by myself because I was so scared, and then I sat there throughout the whole movie like silently crying into my shoulder.
I understand. That's like when I saw that movie and Halloween 2 with Rob Zombie.
Oh, man, I gave up after the first one, man. I just couldn't do it.
Man, I watched All right, so I watched the first one on my first date with my wife.
What?
I literally All right, literally, okay? Oh. I watched the second one on our anniversary with my wife, and literally she fell asleep, and I watched the whole thing and was like, this is the fucking worst movie I have sat through in a long time.
Oh, insulting. Oh, I just can't.
Oh, I was pissed. Oh. I was like, I almost want to demand the money back for having seen this movie, but I'm not going to.
I can't believe... Oh, man. Does your wife like either of those movies? Did she watch both of them with you?
The first one we both kind of enjoy, which is why we actually went to go see the second one. And then we hate the second one. It's so bad. Oh. So bad.
That's a strange movie to be is like, this is where our love like started to crystallize after we watched Rob Zombie's first Halloween movie.
All right, well, let me explain to you. My wife's favorite film series is Friday the 13th.
Okay. That works.
So it kind of works out.
What is her favorite? Which film is her favorite out of the series?
I would have to say probably 3 or 4.
Okay. Yeah.
I would say 4 more than 3. Yeah,
Final Chapter is my favorite. So.
Because we watched both of those quite a few times.
Okay. So it makes more sense there. Oh, has she seen definitely. Temple of Doom, though?
She has.
Does she love it?
She loves it. She loves Temple of Doom.
She's a keeper. Keeper, man. That's great.
Oh, she is. Great. We've been married for, 8 years.
All right. Wait. 8 years?
Yep.
So, 2009?
Yes, sir.
When did you get married in 2009?
August 27th.
Ah, I got married May 22nd, 2009.
There you go.
There you go, man. Keep the love alive.
Right. We actually got married on the actual anniversary date, so that was kind of funny.
That is super cool, man. That is super cool. So Temple of Doom.
But Temple of Doom. Fucking love this movie. Fucking love it. It's actually really, really great.
Can you believe it was written by the same people that wrote Howard the Duck, though? Like, how did that happen? Like, what happened there?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I think some of it is the influence between Steven Spielberg and his entire mental state at the time. And at the same time, I think a lot of drugs. Lots of drugs. Hallucinogens and cocaine, mostly. Lots of cocaine.
He was in a dark place. You know?
Well, you know the 80s, man. The 80s. If you weren't on cocaine and listening to Danger Zone, then you weren't happening.
I mean... Now you're speaking my language, man. I was about to say that there's been a lot of great films that have been made on a lot of cocaine. So, I mean, whatever it takes to get you there, man. Like, they could complain that they were in a dark place and all that. This is their least favorite. But I'm just like, I'm on the opposite side of the fence, guys. I think this is a great, fun, roller coaster of a movie. But overall, John, like I said, one of my favorites, Indiana Jones wise and Steven Spielberg wise, I think it still holds up. I love it. I think it's great.
It was a great.
And as a fan of this movie, I also love the now defunct Indiana Jones stage show at Disney World. And then there's also an Indiana Jones ride here at Disneyland where. It's kind of like the mine cart sequence, roller coaster ride like thing going on. So yeah, man, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Hell yeah, it's like a ship, man. It's like a ship.
It's awesome, and yeah, man. I feel like I'm a 6-year-old kid again. Watch on that ride, and Star Wars Land is coming in a couple years, so I'm excited about that as well. So it's all good, man. It's all good. Temple of Doom.
Hell yeah.
Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom.
I kind of want to get the soundtrack because there's some portions in the Temple of Doom where they're chanting, you know, like the mullaram, mullaram, boom, 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 you know, where it gets really like cool. And stuff.
I wonder if that's actually part of the soundtrack, though.
Is it?
I wonder because I figure the music might be part of the soundtrack, but is the chanting part of the soundtrack?
Damn well should be.
Questions. Questions.
Damn well should be. Whatever. Anyway.
John, the guy fucking up continuity and asking too many questions.
Oh, did you know? Anyway. Good times, man. Yeah. Good times.
Oh, it's great times. It's a fantastic movie, and they get that stone back to an old boy who talks in English at this. I want to point out, why did those little kids talk English?
Little kids at the end?
The little kids at the end, like the thing with the blood, the thing with the blood, with Indiana Jones and the straps and the shackles and Short Round, and the two young Indian boys at that point when they told him about the blood of Kali Ma, both spoke English very well, but yet most everyone spoke like the commoners from that specific village all spoke Indian.
I don't know, man. Why?
I thought that was actually kind of funny. And then the fact that old boy at the end speaks English to them for like a brief moment about the stones. And he's just watching Steven Spielberg off the edge of the fucking camera go, "This is what you're saying."
Again. Say it again.
He's like, just say it again. He's watching him for the phonetics of actually what he's saying because he doesn't speak English at all.
Do you? One thing that I didn't ask you is, if you were in an airplane and it was about to crash, do you think that you could just like jump into like a floaty type pool out the window and it would land right side up and you'd be cool, or would you?
I'm gonna be honest with you. This movie is the movie that taught me that if you are in certain doom of a plane crash over the ocean and you have a life raft, then surely you will save yourself by actually jumping out of this speeding plane at about 200 miles an hour onto a life raft, onto the ocean, and it will save you.
I saw something that they actually like tested this out with like dummies or something before they actually did like the test, and it actually worked, but I just don't know. Like, I don't know, man. It definitely is a tense scene, and it works. I love the fact that they like make it all that way, and then they go off another cliff at the end, and then they're in like an whole other movie. Like they go from snow and stuff to Indian jungle and stuff. So,
now I feel like an ass, dude.
What?
I feel like a fucking ass.
Why do you feel like
I haven't even specifically because you mentioned it feels like two different movies. It does feel like two different movies, my man, all the way from the point where it starts off with the fucking anything goes, which Kate Capshaw was actually super happy about doing because she was like, "Oh, I'm going to get to sing and dance." And then the dress was way too fucking tight. So she was like, "I can't barely move without breaking this fucking thing," which was made out of 1920s and 1930s beads and was completely one and original. And it was the last scene shot, and the elephant had eaten it earlier.
Hell yeah, elephant. Eat that shit. That's great.
So they like eaten part of the dress, and so they had to fucking hurry up and fix it for the last shot. But the thing I want to point out specifically is Roy Chow.
Yeah. Is that the,
who is Lao Che at the beginning?
Yeah.
Lao Che at the beginning. And come on now. Right there at the beginning, it feels like a whole different movie up until the point that you actually get to India. It does. It feels like it's starting off as two different movies because the whole beginning of this movie has a way different feel. And come on now, Roy. Come on now. Who doesn't love Roy? And if you don't know where Roy, if you can't even begin to place Roy, who I'm talking about, think of Kill Bill, because everybody's seen fucking Kill Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And think about the Swordmaker, which I'm brain farting on the fucking name right now, and I feel like an asshole.
The Swordmaker?
Yeah, he plays Tanaka.
He does play Tanaka. Is that true?
He plays Tanaka in both Kill Bill. He is also in Bloodsport. He plays Jean-Claude Van Damme's master.
Damn. That's awesome. He does.
He does, sir.
Bloodsport's on our list of to-dos. We haven't done any Jean-Claude or Steven Seagal movies, so...
Oh, dude, I can't wait. I cannot wait to hear what Chrissy's opinion on fucking Bloodsport is.
Those are me coming. I'm sure that'll be very successful, but
I literally think like a third or a fourth of our entire episode is literally just us talking about the amount of montages in the movie.
Oh, gosh.
Like, it's the most montage heavy film ever.
Oh, man. So good. So good. Oh, man.
I love that fucking movie. I love it.
Kumite!
Kumite! Fight to survive!
Oh, man. We just watched Rocky IV last night for the first time, and that, talk about montages, man. That movie is like a good 40% of it is montages. So that,
yeah, I was gonna say, man, once you get into like the third and fourth and all of those Rocky films, it just turns into a lot of montages.
Oh man.
Gotta love the 80s, man. The 80s was so montagey, it wasn't funny. You gotta have a training montage, you gotta have a fucking flashback montage, you gotta have a walking montage.
Gotta put these amazing 80s songs somewhere. Let's do a montage. So
it's like, man, got to put them in somewhere, man. The 80s is full of amazing songs.
Oh man.
And cocaine.
and cocaine. Holy moly, man.
Well, I mean, the Bee Gees ran the 70s.
This is true.
What the fuck? Yeah, this is great. I love this.
Oh man.
Oh.
What else? Have we talked about everything? What have we talked about? What have we not talked about? I think we talked about everything.
I think we pretty much covered it at this point. I think we've actually covered it at this point. I mean, like I say, Dan Aykroyd is apparently supposedly in this movie at one point.
Yeah, he's the guy that takes them to the Lao Che, the plane. He's the one that's like, you know.
That's right. That's right.
To paraphrase, he's like, I didn't have a lot of time, so I found this one, blah, blah. I think it's going to work for you. And he walks up the plane.
He's in there for such a brief fucking moment.
And then Lao Che, like, comes up, and then Indiana Jones is like, blah, blah, blah. Ha, ha, ha. He closes the door, and it's Lao Che Airlines. He's like, later on, Mr. Jones. So.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's just, it kills me. I'm like, it's Dan Aykroyd, and I always forget it's Dan Aykroyd. Like, always, I'm like, I don't know how, like, I love Dan, and I always forget he's in this movie.
Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, that's a great actor, and it's pointing back to Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank, one of the best 90s action films of all time.
It was. Was one of the greatest. Nice. What the?
I'm looking at IMDb trivia, and one of the ones actually says Short Round is surprisingly absent in the sequels, and it only one of
surprisingly
only one of 24 found this interesting. It's great.
Well, you know what I think's funny? The one thing I do want to point out is, why is it we never hear whatever happens to Short Round after this movie?
Well, I think we already answered that question. He settled down. He settled down. He had some kids, and then one of those kids had some kids, and that was Data, and they moved into the northwest of Oregon and settled down, and then they had some money troubles, and that's when we came into the Goonies. So, yep. That's right.
We did. We settled that, didn't we?
Not really. Oh, man.
But wait. The one thing I do want to point out is how I find it interesting that every one of the characters' names, Willie, Short Round, and Indiana, is each named after one of the Spielberg, Lucas's, and somebody else's dogs.
It's so inventive of them. Like, you know, just an...
It's like, why not just name some movie characters after our dogs? Sounds like a great idea. We loved them.
Kate Capshaw, like she gets hired. She's like, so I wanted to like really delve into my character and stuff, and like really get her backstory. Like, where did her name came from? That was my dog. You know.
Yeah, it's like Spielberg's like, that was my dog's name.
He's like high on coke. It's my dog. My dog.
Lucas is like, my name. My dog's name was Indiana.
Oh man, Yeah. I mean, I guess Indiana, that would be a good name for a dog, Indiana Jones. I would just call my dog Indiana Jones, you know, just the whole thing. That would work.
Well, I mean, they do make that crack about it. And
this is my dog. Last Crusade. My dog, Molaram.
It's like, what, Junior, why do you keep calling yourself that? That was the dog's name.
That's a pretty good impression. That's good.
Thank you.
Oh.
But all right, everybody. So this has been fucking fantastic. I can't think of a single thing that we have actually missed out on this movie at this point.
Yeah. I mean, basically, if there's anything we missed out on, you could just come back to us and we can do an addendum because I could talk about this movie forever. Not the continuity errors as much because I don't see those like John does, but if you want me to like pull out a top 20 awesome moments list, I can do that in kind of
there's a ton of awesome moments.
10 minutes flat. But yeah, man, if anyone's obviously if they've never seen it and they listen to this whole thing, something's wrong. But I keep pushing it, man. I think a lot of people are turning around on it. I think they were colored at the time that it was. I mean, at the time, they're like, "Oh, this is super dark and stuff." But you know, nowadays, our movies are more heavy and deep, and you know, there's darker and themes anyway.
Oh, there's much darker themes as you progress through the years. As you get to the 90s and 2000s to now, like there's a lot heavier themes going on than the 80s. So in comparison, I mean, really. Yeah, it's kind of a dark film, but compared to a lot of things we see nowadays, it's not that dark.
At least it's fun dark. Like
it's definitely fun.
Nobody dark. Would say that Requiem for a Dream is like a roller coaster ride, unless it's a roller coaster ride of, you know, insanity or something.
Yeah, of insanity. But, hey, man, Swimming with Sharks. Speaking of that, yeah, that's definitely. I mean, although there's a lot of amusing moments in it. But definitely not as lighthearted as this movie.
Definitely. And who would want a Swimming with Sharks Disney ride? No one. No one would want that.
No one wants
but
that.
But a Requiem.
Because it involves a lot of paper
But
cuts.
A Requiem for a Dream Disney ride. Yeah.
Also sounds like a bad idea.
Ass to ass, guys. Ass to ass.
I feel like if there was a fucking Requiem for a Dream Disney ride, you would be riding in like a fucking hypodermic needle through this entire thing. And I'm just like, wow, that seems like a real way to mess your kids up.
Oh, man. I love that movie. That's a great movie.
Oh, it's a great movie. Great movie.
Oh. Anyway, enough.
Anyway, yes, but we're going to get to the end of this and find out if...
We got to lose it. We got to lose it.
All right, everybody, so, yep, we're going to get into the rating system, and it's a... Going to sleep, a 40, a six pack, a case, or a case of 40s, depending on how well you liked it. Well, Justin, what are you going to give this?
Oh, I mean, this is the easiest thing ever. A case of 40s, man. Case of 40s right down the line. Multiple, if multiple cases of 40s were an option, I would probably pick that. So,
Justin getting tore up. Extra tore
dude,
up.
Dude, for one of my favorite movies of all time, I will get tore up. On multiple cases of 40s for this movie. So
he's like, he ain't getting no 40s of King Cobra, though. He getting the good shit.
Bring me all the good shit. All
Shock Top all the way.
Do you know what, guys? Shock Top doesn't get enough love. You know, Shock Top, if you want to come and sponsor me personally as a person or my podcast, I'm here for you. Shock Top. Thank you.
We give you enough play with that Shock Top. Eventually, they got to.
It's a good beer, guys. It's not bad. It's not bad. So there you go.
It's not the worst. It's not the worst.
It's not the worst. Sometimes you got to find something a little bit in the middle, guys. You know, it's not the worst. It's not the best. It's kind of in the middle. Just kind of whatever, man. I like it.
Well, slightly better than the middle is this movie, which I'm going to give a case.
There you go. Yay.
So, yeah. So I got to give it a case. I'm not quite going to give it a case of 40s because There is a couple of small issues, but aside from that, like, the movie is fantastic. I love it. And from the first time I saw it to today, I still love this movie. So if you don't like it, fuck yourself.
I was about to say, you would have given it a case of 40s if not for the multiple continuity errors that totally threw you off and, you know.
Pretty much.
What? So Malaram's, how did he grab that one stone and why? Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not even, that's less bothersome than like some of the other ones. Like the other ones are the ones, specifically the one about the volcano and her and not bursting into flame and it just, I don't get
they
it.
They just dialed it down. They just dialed it down, man. Like
They have different levels. Female, male.
It's like an
oven.
Levels.
It's like an oven.
It's like an oven. Sometimes you got to dial it down. Maybe it was that's they just dialed it down. It wasn't
as hot because it was still feasting off of the first guy.
Well, they had it on broil for the guy, and they're like, man, way too much. Let's dial it down to like 375, you know, and that's like a good. You know, a good point to have your oven or your Temple of Doom, whatever that's called. Like, who? What's the upkeep on that? By the way, like, who keeps that running and stuff? Like, it's very confusing. But
all that child labor
is that what they're doing? Is they're keeping that thing hot?
Lots of upkeep, keeping it hot. You know, fueling the fire. They're throwing coal in there periodically.
Those poor kids. Poor kids.
They're beating rocks with fucking wooden tools. Like literally like sticks sharpened into fucking like picks and stuff and not hammering them into rocks and actually getting through the rocks with no repercussions or just with ease. And I'm like, okay.
That's the thing. What happened to the Temple of Doom once, you know, all the bad guys were caught and stuff? Did anyone?
I don't know. Well, that's the thing. I don't know. Were they all caught though? Like they let the kids go, and all the kids got home, and the Maharaj actually was still there as they left.
Yeah.
And then a lot of those dudes died, but not all of the dudes died.
So what you're saying is the Maharaj was like, fuck it, I'm going back. Like, I'm taking the mantle. Like, we got to continue this Temple of Doomage. Or do you...
I don't know if he continued the Temple of Doom. Speaking of which, why did they never get burnt, even though he burnt them with a torch?
Well, I mean, he just, like, grazed them, John.
He, like, stuck it on them, and they're like, ah! And then, like, Harrison Ford's chest is still very hairy.
Jesus Christ. You're like watching this movie. You're like, ha ha, shenanigans. I caught you, Temple of Doom. That wouldn't happen. Like, fuck this movie.
So, I'm like, his chest hair would have burnt away and that sexy chest would have been nice and smooth.
You see, in my mind at the end, the Maharaj has like recognized the error of his ways and he turns it into like a kind of like a Temple of Doom museum for people to come by and pay their respects and like see the Temple of Doom behind like a, you know, like a glass enclosure, but not be too close to, you know, the flames or anything hot that would.
I don't know. The way I actually feel like the Maharaj dealt with at the end of the movie is that like when it actually ends, I'm like, okay, well, maybe he actually like followed through with the same shit that he actually said he was all about at the beginning of the film when you first meet him. Where he's about peace, love, and just trying not, you know, do the opposite of what they were doing. So I'm like, okay, well, my best feelings are that he actually did that, and that he raised a very prosperous kingdom.
My people are all about peace, love, and understanding, not burning people in Temple of Doom flames.
That's right.
Sounds good, man. That works for me. That's great.
I think I like it.
Good.
But hell yeah, I love it. This has been great, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Justin, tell everybody where they can find So I Married a Movie Geek.
So you could pretty much Google So I Married a Movie Geek and find us in several places. We are on Podbean, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, or even on Facebook, on Twitter at Movie Geekcast. But yeah, we're everywhere, and we love talking movies with people. Whether you may be wherever you are, we're there, and it's usually me talking, but love to talk movies anytime, John. You invite me back, right. Just name the movie, and I'm here. So let's do this.
I love it, man. That sounds great. Because I will most likely do it again in a later day.
And if you like fantasy drafts, like football or baseball online, we do this thing on our show called the Fantasy Movie Draft, where it's kind of like a little competition thing we do every now and then. And I've had John on a few times to draft some movies, and had a great time. So we're going to have actually a lot more of those coming in the future if you like stuff like that. So,
heck yeah, those are awesome. Like you said, I've been on. I've come in third both times.
Hey, man.
Both times.
I've been on them all, and I've only won once. So there you go.
You tied once.
Tied once, won once.
Tied once, won
it's
once.
It's all about the love of the game. And
it is. It's about the love the of the game.
Game.
Is, it's fantastic.
The game is movies and talking shit about movies. So we're covered. So.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, dude, it's great. It's always a fun time. Always fantastic. It's always a great listen. So y'all should definitely check those out. Check out his main show with Chrissy, because it is really, really great. And if you like certain movies, you will most likely become infuriated at the ratings that they get from Chrissy, such as Big Trouble in Little China. And
exactly, you know. Art is subjective, and people have different opinions. And the reason I do my show is I love movies, and I love my wife. And
I want to know how the Human Centipede got a better rating.
It's crazy, man. You can never.
It's nuts.
That's the thing. You can never guess. I'm surprised every week sometimes. So, yeah, you know, listen to our show. But main thanks to John for having me on his show. I'm a big fan of you, a big fan of your show, and to come on and talk about one of my favorite movies was awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Hell yeah, man. I loved having you on. It was great. So glad you actually came on, and I was so happy to have you. And, yeah, more than happy to have you again, and I most likely will. But at the same time, everybody, y'all can check the show at Now in Tech Pod. .weebly.com and Now in Tech Pod on Twitter, and then you just put Now in Technicolor in your search engine, you're gonna find us. Now in Technicolor podcast, whatever. Plus we're part of the network
what
which we love to which we have actually made some changes to. We are actually the Podfix Network now, and nothing's really changed. It's now the podfixnetwork.com is where you can find all the shows. It's still the same 10 shows, and we've added a few extra very awesome podcasts to the lineup. So everybody, you know, check that out, and you know, give everybody a listen, and hopefully a review. And if you love Justin's show, you love this show, if you're listening on iTunes and you want to shoot either one of us a 5-star review, that would be awesome. But it's great. So yeah, like I say, I'm a huge fan of his show. Everybody, y'all check that out. I loved having you on, man. And everybody, it's been great. Take care, and stay colorful.
What? Lick it up. I'm not afraid.